Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Holistic Hub podcast. Today, I was joined by PJ Harlow, who owns her own consulting firm that specializes in holistic mold and water damage remediation. Known for her pragmatic approach and unwavering advocacy, PJ guides health-conscious clients through navigating the complexities of mold and mycotoxin exposure in their homes. A visionary leader in the field, PJ leverages her deep industry knowledge to empower clients with informed decision-making about their home's health and well-being. Having helped thousands navigate complex situations, PJ remains a staunch advocate for their best interests. Beyond consulting, PJ is passionate about educating and empowering others. As the founder and curriculum director of the Academy for Holistic Home Health and Mold Sciences, she offers bespoke online courses for homeowners, renters, and professionals. These courses equip individuals with the knowledge and skills necessary to cultivate thriving indoor environments that promote long-lasting well-being. I really loved this episode with PJ. She gave us so many nuggets of knowledge on just how to navigate our own home environment, from identifying potential mold sources in the home that could be making you feel unwell, testing purposes, what to do if you find out that mold is an issue in your home, the differences between good and bad mold home remediation, and my favorite one is it even possible to have a mold-free home? One of the testing methods that PJ talks about is the ERMI test, and she was kind enough to give the podcast listeners a discount code for an ERMI plus interpretation kit. You can use code Dr. Peacock for the discount. That is DrPeacock. Again, that's code Dr. Peacock. I hope you guys enjoy this episode as much as I did. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Holistic Hub podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Stephanie. I am so excited to interview PJ Harlow today. She is an expert on all things mold, mold remediation, how to dissect your home for mold, and understand what is going on with your home's microbiome. So I know, PJ, you have a very personal story about what has brought you to wanting to do this and help other people. So I'd love for you to introduce yourself and just explain like what it is that brought you into this field.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Stephanie. And thank you so much for having me on the show. I've been so excited for this. Like for the past few weeks, I've been like counting down. So it's really a pleasure to be here. So thank you for that. So yes, my name is PJ Harlow, and I fell into this whole world of mold and building health when my own health really took a turn for the worse about, geez, I think it's coming up on like 7 years now. And, you know, I was just a busy mom working a corporate job actually for an insurance company, State Farm, and living life. And then all of a sudden I started to get symptoms. I got symptoms in my hands. I thought I had carpal tunnel. Then I started to have joint pain, fatigue, my hair started to fall out, acne, just something wasn't right. At first I kind of thought like, oh, I'm just getting older, right? This is just what getting old feels like. And it took me almost a year to figure out what it was. I did all the tests and, you know, all different kinds of doctors, and nobody could really give me any answers. They diagnosed me with fibromyalgia, but it just didn't click with me. It didn't sit with me. I mean, I was debilitated. I started stuttering. I couldn't swallow. I was choking. They thought I had MS. Like, it was just really bad. And I was scared. Like, what is happening to me? I couldn't function. And finally, we found mold in our house. And it was like, instantly, we were like, this is what it is. And that really propelled me into a journey that I was certainly not prepared for. And at the time, it was, you know, devastating to go through and very painful because, you know, this was 7 years ago. Nobody was talking about mold. There were no podcasts. There were no, people on Instagram talking about it. It was like everybody was like, mold, what is that? The big thing was Lyme disease. And so it was very difficult to find resources or people to help. And I very much was gaslit, isolated, and it was very, very lonely for my husband and I to go through with my kids. And it even got to the point where, it even caused problems with, like, I almost lost custody of my kids because nobody believed that I was really sick. They thought that I was making this up. And so it was pretty hard to go through. But I want to be clear, though, I'm grateful, though, that this happened to me. I know that really probably sounds like, what is this woman talking about? But at the time, it's just so weird when things happen to us. I feel like, at the time before that, when I look back in retrospect, I was really putting it out there into the universe that I wanted change in my life. And I didn't, this wasn't the path that I wanted to be on. I was happy in my marriage, but I was miserable at my job, and just I wanted things to be different. And it's kind of like, be careful what you ask for, right? And I'm very much a proponent that I feel like we grow in the darkness, right? Just like mold, right? And that is basically what happened to me. I'm kind of like the cliche phoenix, right? From the ashes of disaster come the roses of success. And because I was, so sick, lacking resources, lacking professionals, I had to advocate for myself, like many of us do on our health journeys. We have to dive deep and start researching. And I was learning everything I could at the time because it was truly not just my health, but my kids were on the line. I had a huge court case stacked against me, and I had to prove that not only was this real and my kids were suffering from this illness as well, that but also that, I'm not crazy. I don't have Munchausen syndrome by proxy. I'm not poisoning my kids with herbs. I won the case. And after that, it just was, I couldn't go back to the way things were. So I changed my career and did a complete 360 and became a holistic practitioner. And opened my practice in 2018, 2019, and started working with people who had mold illness. That was originally my goal. And one of the foundations that we would cover would always be, okay, before we even talk about supplements and drainage and all these things, what's going on with your house? And so many of my patients were like, well, we're still living in mold and we don't know what to do. We don't know who to hire. We don't know what to do with our stuff. We don't even know where the mold is. Like, we weren't taught how to do this. My husband isn't on board. Nobody believes me too. And it was just like, wow, there's this huge gap in the housing industry and even the journey, right? It's kind of, I call it this trifecta. You have the client, the patient, and usually an inspector and a remediator. And there's so many holes in that journey that it was literally enough to create a role. And so that's pretty much what I did. I pioneered this role of the holistic mold consultant and started helping my patients through this. I made a separate session and then it blew up. And then COVID happened. And then it was like we got booked out for months and months and months. And because we were all inside. So it was like everybody was kind of going through this. And that's pretty much the genesis of how PJ Harlow Wellness really evolved and how I've kind of landed myself here as a, building expert and a holistic mold consultant.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing your story. It's honestly, it's so inspiring, and I love whoever I chat with that gets into the holistic wellness space. Like, I love to hear their story because, like you said, a phoenix rising from the ashes. It's usually comes from a place of darkness that someone had experienced and been through themselves to then really be motivated and inspired to not want somebody else to go through what they went through and to do everything in their power to get their clients or their patients to that place. And I love that your model, it started out with working with patients on probably detoxification, the correct supplements for detoxing the correct mycotoxins out of their system. But then you realize this huge gap in, well, that's all said and that's great, but we also have to address the environment. We can't have you living in mold and also detoxing you at the same time, right? We have to figure out what is going on in your home environment too, and hopefully get that figured out so that way you can fully heal, right? So
yeah, I think that was really inspiring. Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, you know, going to school and you know, I love my kind of mentor and teacher, Carla Atherton. She taught me so much about holistic medicine and functional health. And, you know, and I bring those kind of concepts over into the home, you know, and that is really why I'm such a proponent of supporting the home microbiome, right? It's because it's all connected, right? Even when we look at functional medicine and holistic health, it's all root cause, right? And this is kind of where that all comes down to is it would be silly for you to, and wait, let me go backwards for a second. Sometimes I feel like, and you probably know this more than anybody, sometimes I feel like, you know, the holistic world is, I see people coming and bringing these Western concepts over into the holistic model where it's just like, you're doing the same exact thing. You're just giving people supplements instead of pharmaceuticals. And it's like, you know, is that really treating the root cause, you know, or are we just emulating the exact thing in allopathy? So
I see that all the time. Exactly. It's just like, instead of using medication, we're using supplements as a bandage, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was perfectly said. But yeah, thank you for sharing your story and being open with us because it's inspirational. And I know that that is absolutely going to reach people because it's tough when you're dealing with a chronic illness and symptoms that you can't explain. And oftentimes, more often than not, it can be what is in the home that is making you sick because we spend up to 90%. I think the statistic is we spend up to 90% of our time indoors. So addressing the home and assessing if that is a possible root cause of your symptoms is super important. So I think this was a great way to lay the groundwork for. I actually want to start with asking you, is it even possible to have a mold-free home?
That's a really awesome question. And I'm a huge proponent for language, linguistics, definitions, and especially in the health world. You know, we're all on social media, we're all communicating with each other. And, you know, I see that phrase and that question, mold-free home, what does that really mean? I like to really break that down first and kind of deconstruct it. So it's the same as kind of asking, like, what does a healthy home mean? It means different things for many different people. Now, as I kind of mentioned earlier, the home microbiome, right? In reality, there is no such thing as a mold-free home. And I don't say that to gaslight anyone or, you know, because there are people who use that as like a gaslighting type term. And that is not at all what I mean. I want to help teach people realistic expectations about their home and about mold because it's so feared in the community and it shouldn't be. I think that yes, we have fear there for a reason, right? We're built to have fear. If we didn't have fear, then we would be dead by the time we were like 5 years old, right? It's innate. It's built into us to protect us. But mold is not really as scary as many people make it to be. And so when we talk about having a mold-free home in your home naturally, let's talk about what a healthy home actually is. So every home, no matter where it is in the world, has a diverse species of microorganisms, bacteria, fungi, yeast, protozoa, and even parasites, right? Just like your gut. That's kind of a great comparison. And we want a nice kind of diverse, rich microbiome. We want all different kinds of microbes, little guys, big guys, purple guys, blue guys, right? We that's the objective, because why? When we have a nice diverse home microbiome, that is what continues to, you know, teach our immune system. And if we don't, right, which is kind of the mainstream narrative, you're either moving towards sterility or you're moving towards, you know, life. It's either, you know, one or the other in that kind of line. And so, you know, it's really about finding a balance to understand that you're never going to be able to make your home mold-free. And even if you tried to do that, there's consequences to that. You know, number one, if you start killing everything, you won't kill everything. You'll end up killing the little guys, right? All that we just talked about. And then you'll end up having an environment unintentionally creating this kind of like stealth microbe situation where it's not going to be good for your vitality and your immunity. I mean, we are microbial beings. We're made of microbes. So it's really important. I'm like on this mission to help people understand that, you know, we've all been brought up with the like, grab the bleach, right? And this kind of overly disinfectant type community, especially with what we went through. I won't even say the C word, but what we went through a few years ago, it's like that almost propelled us even into this, you know, larger fear of microorganisms. Now, certainly we don't want mold growing in our home. That is different, right? But the objective is to get it nice and balanced. And so that's why I like to say maybe microbiome friendly or mold friendly or a balanced, healthy home. I like to use those terms more than mold free, because that's truly not the case. You're supposed to even be exposed to little amounts of mold, like in your dishwasher or your drain or your laundry machine. You just can't get away from those things. They're going to be there. Even when we do testing, like ERMI testing, we take that into consideration because, you know, that's just reality.
One of the best ways to promote detoxification from different environmental pollutants, mycotoxins, and heavy metals is through the use of an infrared sauna. This is why I love using my Sunlight and Sauna at least 4 to 5 times a week to promote detoxification from different things that we can come into contact with. I can also trust that it's made with high quality materials and that I'm getting all the benefits of using the infrared sauna while not being exposed to any further chemicals. You can find the link for the Sunlight and Sauna in the show notes and use code Dr. Peacock for $100 off. I love what you just said, because, and that's why I really wanted to just lay the groundwork with that question, because I think it's so easy to get caught up in seeing, you know, whether it's, you know, on social media or on different blogs or whatever it is on the internet, we often see, okay, we want to have as sterile an environment as possible. It needs to be as mold-free as possible. But just like you related it to the gut, you know, we have our good gut microbes and then there's also our bad ones, but not necessarily that they're bad. It's just the good keep the bad in check, and that there's like a nice level that we can exist in, a nice ecosystem. And I think that's really important that you address that piece and that you're on a mission to state that, because I also think that creating that fear mongering around having a completely mold-free environment can also be an issue as well. And so I love that you related it to the gut and you related it to the fact that it's okay. We are actually supposed to have some mold here and there, and there's mold outside our home too that we are exposed to on a daily basis. and we are microbial beings too. So I think that's wonderful. I would love to then dive into what are then some signs that somebody could find in their home that would address that they are having potentially an overgrowth of certain strains of mold that can be harmful to our health. Like, what could somebody be looking for, and whether it's smells, sights, anything?
Sure, sure. I think probably one of the easier signs to look for is your toilets. You know, you can start to see a ring where the water line is. Sometimes it'll get pink, and that's actually a bacteria called Serratium or Sezzins, and that can be pretty normal. I even get it in my own toilet. But if you're starting to see little specks appear, like within a week, okay, that is going to be a sign that there is a higher fungal ecology, okay, somewhere in the house. And if you look when you're cleaning, and if you pull off the back of your tank, that is another sign if you see a bunch of mold in there. Now, sometimes you might get a little bit on like the tubing or something like that, and it just clean it up very carefully with just some dish soap and water. But if you open it and it's got it like on the back sign, which is usually underneath the lid, definitely look under there too. That can be an indicator. Smells is a real big one. If you smell that musty odor, that's actually VOCs being put off by the mold itself and VOCs. Another thing would be, you know, I think it's really important to learn about your house and learn about how it works. And, you know, I think that even myself, you know, I worked in the insurance industry for freaking sake, you know, and I still looked at houses aesthetically, you know, and I think that we just, it's natural, you know, we're not taught any of this, but there are areas in your home that would be considered non-livable spaces or even unconditioned spaces that are going to be higher risk. Attics, crawl spaces, basements, your HVAC. Those are like the top four spaces that frequently have mold, because, you know, we don't hang out in our crawl space. We don't hang out in our attic. You know, most people are even unaware of where their air handler actually is. They're always usually like, oh, it's outside, and that's the condenser. That's one part of it, but there's another part called your air handler. And those are some areas that need, you know, frequent inspection. You know, not every day or anything like that. That's obsessive. I'm really big on balance and trying to balance the care of your home versus, you know, being too on the other side of it. And so, but those are some areas, your drains as well. I think that you should definitely keep your drains clean. But if you check those areas, you know, even just with like a flashlight, under your sinks is another spot. And when you take your flashlight, a great tip is don't just hold it straight like this. Like if you have a wall, you want to kind of maybe put it up against the wall like this, put it down like this, change the positioning, because you'll see it will change your perspective of how you can see. And you're going to be looking for any discoloration, any swelling, any kind of surface change, anything that just looks like it's been wet. And ultimately, that's the key too of what we're looking for. I always try to teach my students to focus on the moisture, not the microbe, because the microbe is just a byproduct of the moisture. So, so those are some things I would probably start with. And then on the health side of things, there are just a ton of symptoms. You know, you can kind of Google, there's such a huge list of symptoms, but, you know, I think that listening to your intuition, especially if you are a woman, most of the time women are the first ones to get sick, and, you know, they kind of dull their intuition because, you know, it's just kind of something we do sometimes. And, you know, listen to it, follow that intuition. If something is not right, you know, Certainly, I have so many clients that come to me and say, "Oh, well, I thought it was postpartum. I thought it was just my hormones, or I thought that I was just getting old, or this is how I was supposed to feel, and I'm just stressed out, and I'm a mom, and I have kids." And you know, we kind of get into that kind of narrative that it's just we normalize not feeling well. And so I think that, you know, if you haven't been on the journey of looking at your home and you don't know how to care for it, these things happen. It just truly does. You know, even from humidity. I think that sometimes people think that water damage and mold only comes from, like, if your toilet overflowed, or if, you know, a tree falls on your house and it's raining or something. But a lot of times it's coming from condensation, from humidity. And these are things that you're not necessarily going to see. So it's oftentimes very hidden.
Oh my gosh, a couple of things that I want to just kind of go back to and what you just stated. So, first, I love that you mentioned to listen to our intuition because I think that one also doesn't get talked about enough because mold, it really can affect every organ system and can, you know, and it can start small with certain, you know, symptoms like you had mentioned earlier. Having some joint pain, or maybe even the starting of like carpal tunnel syndrome, just things that might just seem like they're starting to gradually come on, but you're relating it to, oh, well, maybe, you know, other people are dealing with this too. And we normalize feeling unwell sometimes. And so I think addressing that piece and being like, okay, this doesn't feel right. Something is going on, and let me look further. I think that's such a great piece. But the second piece is actually that humidity part because I find more often than not that is a really missing piece in the mold space and talking about what else can be contributing to potentially creating that mold overgrowth within the home. We often think of, like you had mentioned, water damage. Okay, water damage, looking for signs of water damage. Was there a leak? Different things like that. And those are important questions to be asking and looking for, absolutely. But again, humidity levels. So I would love to actually dive into this with you because I think this is really important. So, a couple questions. What is the level of humidity that is okay to have in a house before you start to see mold overgrowth? And then the second question, based off of that, are there certain areas of the home that are more prone to humidity levels being a little bit higher? And what could somebody do to potentially help with that?
Sure. So the humidity level that mold growth can start to happen is 67%. So we truly want to keep our homes comfortable. That's the objective. And so you really want to be 45 to 55, preferably on the lower side. 50 is okay, but I don't like to make it like exact, because then I have somebody who lives in Austin, Texas, messaging me and they're like, "I can't get it to 45." And I'm like, "Yeah, you're not going to be able to when it's 106 degrees out." And you know, so we have to be realistic about that too. But you know, generally you want to stay in that zone and be monitoring it. I think that's the important thing. Having, like, you can get like a little hygrometer on Amazon, and they have like a little magnet on it. You can smack it on your refrigerator. You know, you want to be paying attention to that, because that is such a crucial part of your home's health. Is it's not just keeping the temperature cool. And I think that's some often confused as well, as people confuse, like, "Well, I'm using my air conditioner. Isn't that going to be enough?" And that is truly not enough. You really need to be doing something to dehumidify your space. Almost all of the United States needs some kind of dehumidification. Maybe not so much in like Arizona, you know, those types of states, but still, if you're getting above that 55 mark, you definitely need some kind of dehumidification. Now, one of the ways that you can control that is, you know, the simplest way is to get standalone dehumidifier. You know, a lot of times people think that they're just for basements, right? But they're not. We have them in almost every room. I have them turned off right now because the season is not really high where I live, but there's one right behind me over there. We have one in our bedroom. This, however, is a rental that I live in. If it were my own home, I would have a whole home dehumidification system set up on my air conditioning, on my HVAC, and then I would probably monitor around the house. And you know, you can walk around with a handheld hygrometer and see what areas are not getting that dehumidification, right? Because even if you have it on your HVAC system, you can still have pockets throughout your house that may still need an extra boost, and you may have to put like an individual unit there, make sure it's on a nice drip pan. I use a cookie sheet just to put under it to make sure, because they can leak, and then we don't want to create a problem when we're trying to prevent one. So I'm really big on making sure that everything's in a drip pan, but that is the way you really want to control humidity. And it's a really big issue. Like, I can't tell you how many homes that we see that have humidity problems. And, you know, this is going to grow molds like Aspergillus, Penicillium, you know, Cladosporium. It can even start growing on your furniture. Some people have it grow in between their mattresses, and then they're so sick and have no idea that they're literally sleeping on mold. And this is just all because the humidity. And so this can also create problems in those unconditioned spaces that we were talking about, the attics, the crawl spaces, you know, especially in many states across the world, even, you know, that are using HVAC. Oftentimes it's crazy that the building industry hasn't figured this out yet, but we're putting these machines in unconditioned spaces that create cool air. And when you have that temperature differential, it creates a surface. When that hits dew point, condensation is formed. And then if there's a food source, if there's dust up there or any type of, you know, food source for mold, this is how mold happens. So this is so often we see people have their HVAC in their attic. They think everything's good, but the system gets moldy up there because it's, you know, hot, and they have no idea. And, you know, it could maybe only be happening like a couple months out of the year, and then winter comes and then it stops, and maybe they feel a little bit better, and then summer hits again, or, you know, whatever the season may be, it can be the opposite as well. But this is why sometimes people it's not always this like smoking gun that like hits you in the face, right? Oftentimes when we even talk about exposure, and sorry to go into another kind of side section here, but I think this is important for your listeners. When we talk about exposure, just like when we talk about water damage, it's not always that, you know, immense thing. The majority of the people that I work with that are sick got sick over a period of time. It didn't just happen in a week. And, you know, when we talk about mold exposure, you know, I think people kind of have this vision where they think of like an Addams Family house or something that's, you know, covered in mold, these crazy ones that you see on TikTok that people buy abandoned homes. That's truly not really the realistic situation, right? It's usually we're being exposed to medium to, you know, even low levels of mold over time, right? And that starts to build up and build up and build up to the point where your toxic bucket overflows, and you've got all these other things happening and stressful events and things. And we talked about this a few minutes ago. Mold can be an illness in and of itself, but it can also be a trigger for other things. So I think this is why it's so confusing for people. But, you know, that exposure doesn't always need to be like level 100. You know, it could be level 40, kind of like smoking cigarettes. That's the greatest analogy to help people kind of really get it, is like when you're smoking cigs, you might not feel anything when you're smoking, right? You could smoke for 10 years and not feel bad per se, but does that mean it's not affecting you in the long run? You know, and that is kind of what is important to understand, is that you lack of reaction does not mean lack of effect. And so that is why I'm such a proponent for trying to be proactive and, you know, try to put these prophylactics in place to prevent these things from happening. But if it's already happened, that's okay. We can fix it. There's always a workaround, you know, and that's kind of what we're here for, to direct people to.
One of the first places that I start with clients in reducing their exposure to different environmental chemicals is through filtering our water. We are ideally drinking between 8 to 10 cups of water a day, and this can really be a high risk of exposure to many different environmental pollutants. The best way to filter our water is through using reverse osmosis, and I have a great discount link in the show notes for AquaTrue that has a countertop reverse osmosis filter as well as an under the sink. Yeah, I love that you touched on how it's more that chronic low dose exposure that you're getting over time versus this immediate exposure that you had during this day, few days, week period of time, right? Because that's absolutely true. It's and it's like that with, you know, everything, with any other environmental chemical or toxin that we can become exposed to as well, that are whatever's in the products, the water that we're drinking, the food that we are eating, right? It's that chronic low dose exposure that is slowly filling up that bucket over time. And then when that overflows, that's when we start to get those symptoms. And so I love that you also related it to smoking, because that is really, truly a perfect analogy. But something that I also wanted to just go off of as well that you mentioned was, I mean, because this is what I also see in my clients too. And it's probably, it sounds like it's what you also see, is somebody is getting exposed over a period of time, but they're doing on with life. They're doing great. You know, maybe noticing a little fatigue here and there, something might be not right, but they're still functioning. But something comes along that was some sort of stressful event, whether they maybe got a very big viral load, or, you know, there was something personal that happened to them, whether it was some sort of emotional, physical, stressful event that potentially weaken their immune system or just stressed out their system, to then where whatever they are getting exposed to currently or had been exposed to previously to start to kind of come out of the woodworks and really express itself. And I would say that is truly what I seem to find with a lot of my clients, because, you know, I'll meet with somebody and they'll say, well, at this exact like month period of time is when my symptoms started, but I was living somewhere that didn't seem to have mold, or I just can't really pinpoint it. And I'll ask, well, what else happened? And maybe they had just quit their job, or they just got laid off, or there was a death in the family or something very stressful that then triggered whatever it was that they had been exposed to or currently being exposed to start to kind of come out. So is that probably what you tend to find a lot as well in the clients
that
I work with?
Yeah, absolutely. Even on our intake form, I ask questions like that. You know, have you been through some stressful event? You know, whether, you know, has there been a sickness, addiction in your family? You know, are you going through relationship problems, you know, sick kids, you know, job issues, you know, any of those things? Stress is just as toxic as toxins are. And so, you know, and even true, you know, it you may not ever figure out what that exact thing was. And I don't want to say all this to try to hone in on focusing on that. It's more so to help people understand that there can be a combination of things that are happening that, you know, make it so you're kind of the canary, if you will, and why women get sicker quicker, and why they're the ones that are usually going to be, you know, advocating for this, because they're going to be the ones who are feeling it for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I see that as well, is that it's more of a combination versus that one exact thing. So yeah. I'm so glad that we talked about that, because I think that's a really, really important piece. So going back to all of that information that you so beautifully laid out about the humidity levels in the home and like where you want to make sure that you are potentially inspecting here and there to just to make sure that you're not getting, you know, that overgrowth of mold species that could be potentially harmful to our health. Let's say somebody is suspecting then that there is a mold issue. So what is the best testing in your opinion? Because there's all kinds of tests out there, and I know it can really make people feel probably a little bit crazy in terms of what should I do? And should I run an ERMI test? Should I do mold plates? Should I just go straight to an inspector and have them do air testing? So what is your opinion on some of these tests, and what do you think is probably the best place to start?
So there's a lot of tests out there. But the best test to start with, especially, you know, if you are having symptoms and if you're suspecting that there's mold in your house, I prefer to use a test called the ERMI, E-R-M-I. And this is a dust test that, you know, people can do on their own. We actually even sell them on our website. We have a little package that has an ERMI with an interpretation. And that part's important because the results are very difficult to read. The traditional person is not going to be able to understand the results. It is not a yes or no test. And that can kind of help me explain what it actually is. So what we're looking at is we're using the ERMI. First and foremost, the ERMI was created by the EPA for science experiments. They were basically trying to gauge the kind of to create an index of moldiness in homes. That's what it stands for, Environmental Relative Moldiness Index. And so, but, you know, as the years have passed, homeowners have started to use this test to really gauge the fungal ecology in their homes. And so we're not trying to figure out, do you have mold or do you not have mold? As we talked about earlier, we're trying to see, are there irregular patterns? Are there red flags? Are there certain, you know, quantitatively species that shouldn't be on this report? It looks at 36 different species of mold. It's looking at the DNA. And we look at that because some of the other tests that are available that maybe are less expensive are just not accurate enough to be able to provide us with enough data up front to kind of make some decisions off of. So, and that interpretation is really important. You know, some of the labs out there offer what I would call just kind of like a reading, if you will. They may look at kind of like if you're somebody's looking at blood labs, right? And you had somebody just kind of telling you, well, this is high and this is low, and they're looking at like a little cheat sheet, like, you know, the LabCorp type cheat sheet of the ranges. That is kind of what a reading is versus, you know, it's just a basic understanding of what the test measured. It's identifying values, but an interpretation considers your history, your health, you know, your situation. We take all of that into context when the test is being interpreted. So it's a much different outcome because you can't go by the score on the ERMI. That's really, really important. And, you know, because we're using it off label, I think that's really essential for people to know, because you'll hear people kind of, they're against the ERMI and they'll say, oh, well, you know, the EPA doesn't approve that. Well, I understand, but if you're using it off label and you're using it in a different way, you know, just like if a doctor were to prescribe somebody medication, you know, off label, like propranolol or something, which is a blood pressure medication, but they often prescribe it for anxiety off label, it doesn't take away the efficacy of the drug. It just means you're using it in a different way. And so that's what we're doing. We're using this really advanced DNA testing to understand what's happening in your home, what you're being exposed to. It's a historic type of test. And it's really been valuable in our practice to kind of get a baseline understanding of how risky a home is, what pace the homeowner should be moving at. You know, should they be going 100 miles an hour? Usually not. We try to really bring it back down and help people understand the risks so they can better make decisions. And usually we'll kind of move forward with steps after that. Now, you mentioned air sampling and plate testing. Those are two very popular tests that are out there as well. Air sampling is usually done by, it's a tool used by pretty much all mold inspectors. However, it really lacks data for, especially when we're talking about health. You know, it has a lot of limitations. Every test certainly does. The ERMI even has limitations. No test is perfect. But when we're starting out, you know, air testing just doesn't provide us with the answers we're looking for. One of the problems with air sampling is that it's only testing one pocket of air in a room at one time, and that's it. Even I think the World Health Organization has said that air testing is not even an accurate method unless you're testing multiple times throughout the day, multiple times throughout the week, multiple times throughout the month in different areas of the house, because there's all this air movement and airflow in all of our homes, and there's no way to really understand how that's moving and how that's going to affect what the spore trap can actually collect. In addition to the fact that, you know, that's really only focusing on spores, and there's so much more to mold that harms us than spores. There's little tiny fragments, and even some of the species, you know, air sampling is only going to look at the genus. Can't go down to the species level. So it may say, oh, you have some Aspergillus and Penicillium. It kind of groups those together. Great, but what kind? Because there's Aspergillus that isn't really harmful, and then there is other harmful species, Aspergillus niger, Aspergillus penicillodes, you know, Aspergillus versicolor. So it really doesn't. Oftentimes it will come back normal for people, and then they kind of check that box and say, okay, we're good. And then it may be years till they come back to this again. And then, you know, that's 2 years of their life that they lost from their health because they checked that box and thought everything was okay. So it's really important to start off with the right testing if your focus is health. Air testing can be used in other ways. I'm not saying it's bad and we should throw it out the window and never use it, but it just needs to be used strategically, you know, when you're trying to locate sources, but not if you're trying to get kind of like a baseline understanding of how risky your home is and whether or not you should even kind of go down this track of could it possibly be affecting my health. I do want to bring up another thing about the ERMI before I forget. It's really important to, we have taken our time to really make specific instructions on how to collect your sample, because there are many areas in a home that can inhibit the results of the ERMI, so it comes back either too high or it won't come back with enough information on there. There are things like urine, clay, kitty litter, even, you know, if you're using a bunch of essential oils in a diffuser or cleaning with thieves and things like that, that can affect the results of those types of tests. So it's important to make sure that you're, you know, getting some real good instructions there. You mentioned plate testing. I want to touch on that for a second, because that is probably the most affordable route. But here's the thing. As we talked about earlier, mold is everywhere. You know, it's going to grow no matter what. A plate test has a little medium in it, and it It's like literally, you know, the little things you did in science class and things, and they're always going to grow something. And sometimes I think people panic because they're like, oh, it grew, like, and it's like, it's going to grow though. Like, you know, even a healthy home has mold in the air. You will never be able to eliminate mold from being in your air, and you really don't want that type of environment. But you know, that too is just not really an accurate method, you know, because some of the more notable water damage molds, Stachybotrys, Ctomium, A, they're heavier. They're not really gonna fall into those types of tests. Additionally, Stachybotrys is kind of a wimpy mold when it comes to other molds. So it will, even if it did, like let's say a spore fell into the petri dish, it will be outcompeted by most of the other molds. It's such a small environment, and most of the growth medium is not the preferred food for some of the other more water notorious water damage molds. So it's usually only going to come up with, you know, the Cladosporium and some of those more drier primary colonizers. And so it's just not really a great method either. So I wish that there was, the ERMI is expensive, you know, it runs about $300. So it's certainly not the cheapest test, but if it's interpreted by the right person, it can really bring a lot of information and a lot of validity for people, because, you know, it's kind of a two-sided type of situation. In one hand, you're like, ooh, really? I have higher mold counts. But then at the same time, you're like, okay, this answers so many questions that I've been wondering and intuitively thinking, do I have mold? Do I have a problem? So, yeah.
One of my favorite ways to promote cellular rejuvenation and autophagy is through fasting. But water fasting can be really tough for a lot of people due to not being able to eat for long periods of time. This is why my preferred way of fasting is using the Prolon 5-Day Fasting Mimicking Diet, where you are provided with 5 days worth of plant-based meals that are between 600 to 800 calories that actually mimic fasting within the body, so you are still eating while gaining the benefits of fasting. You can find the discount link for the Prolon 5-Day Fasting Mimicking Diet in the show notes. That was great. Thank you for explaining all the different, and like you had mentioned, there's all different types of testing, and I think it can really drive some people crazy to even where to start with trying to assess what is going on within the home once they're suspecting that there might be an issue. So thank you for bringing up all that great information regarding the different testing ways. And let's say somebody ran the ERMI. Okay. And we want to fast forward now too, because I know there's going to be, you know, multiple steps that someone's going to end up needing to take, right, to figuring out what to do with their home. But let's just say we fast forward to the point where they are going to need to do remediation of their home. So I know that you are big on, I've seen some of your posts and blogs about good remediation versus bad remediation. And I would really love to dive into this in terms of what qualifies as bad remediation, and what do we want to look for in terms of what someone in a remediation company would do that would be the best route to take in terms of being able to properly remediate the home.
Sure, sure. So I think it's important for people to understand what a remediation company's responsibilities are. So I've said it before, you know, I think a lot of people think of demo, right? Like that's what they're going to be doing. So, and really anybody can demo. I can demo, you can demo, anybody, you know, a 10-year-old can do demo. But when you're dealing with mold, one of the key components that a remediator, a good remediator's job is controlled demolition. And that engineering of setting up containment using, you know, air filtration devices, AFDs, and negative air machines to create a space that's under containment. And so, you know, when you're opening up a wall, that you're not spreading that all over the place. So I have a colleague of mine who has a machine called an Instascope, and it's a very expensive machine. It's basically kind of like an air sampling test to some degree, and a particle counter mixed together on wheels. It's like $40,000, this machine. And it has like a wand, and he was trying to kind of just experiment with it and see what would happen if he, you know, went right next to a mold colony and kind of took a reading. And I think it was, I probably won't get these numbers exact because I'm horrible at remembering exact numbers, but it was something like around 1,000 or something came back. He just kind of put the wand next to it, and then he just wiped it just very gently with a piece of toilet paper, and it went up to like into the millions. And so just that, you know, comparison there is really important, because if you imagine that, what happens when you've got a sledgehammer or something, and, you know, and you're demoing this wall and you're pulling it back and it's got mold all over the back of the drywall? You know, that's going everywhere. And, you know, when we talk about remediation, it's not just removing the source. There's another part of that, is that what about the stuff that we can't see? And this is kind of where things go wrong in the industry, is because, you know, there are certifications, like we are an IICRC certified firm. I have my own IICRC certifications. Peter, my co-founder, has his. He's a, you know, a remediator, a water restoration tech. We all have our different certifications, but even, you know, people don't follow the guidelines though, because there's no like mold police, there's no, you know, CIA or internal affairs department. Nobody's kind of, you know, it's very much unmonitored. So people are out there and they can do whatever they want. And so when we talk about bad remediation, you know, to me, bad remediation is leaving the home unhealthy. And so there's just a lot of controversy and a lot of companies out there who they might not even know that they're doing things wrong, you know. And let me rephrase that, because I don't like to use the what's wrong or what's right, but what's fitting for our clients. Our clients, their major concern is health. Everything is about making their home healthier and, you know, optimizing their health with this foundation. A lot of traditional remediation companies, their focus is aesthetics. How can we make this look pretty again? They're not really concerned with what is invisible, right? That invisible contamination. So, you know, they're not really super hyper focused on, you know, controlling that containment. Like, I look at it like a kind of Chernobyl type situation, right? If we were at Chernobyl and I was like, okay, we're going to build this containment and we got to make sure that no radiation gets out of it, right? People don't look at microbes like that, not at all. Like, they're kind of like, oh, well, when the plastic billows, we're good, right? But realistically, if you go to school for remediation, you're taught to use specific instruments called a manometer to measure the pressure of the containment to make sure that you're controlling the air to direct out of a window. And so when somebody starts digging into a wall, they change the volume of the cubic meters in that space, right? You just change the mathematical equation. So when somebody goes digging in a wall, they could suddenly be backdrafting all of that contamination into a wall. So it's really supposed to be controlled by someone else on the outside to make sure that whoever the team on the inside, you know, is constantly keeping that pressure at a rate where they can direct the, and control the contamination. So it's leading out of a window and not all into the interstitial spaces of your house. So that is a big kind of boring part of what really good remediation is. Now, there's a lot of companies out there who don't even do containment. They don't even do demo. They just do what's called chemical remediation, and they use chemicals to kill the mold and suppress the mold until and they almost kind of like have taken the model of how we use pesticides and how we kind of treat homes. They took that model and kind of applied it to mold when really it is, this is where fogging companies come in, dry fogging, things like that. That is really not going to do anything if you are someone who's experiencing symptoms and you're going to waste, they're pretty expensive too. It's a couple $1,000. I think the last quote I heard was like $5,000, and they come in and fog your home. This does not remove a mold problem. Mold must be removed. The source needs to be removed. The issue needs to be corrected, and then all of the invisible contamination needs to be cleaned up, needs to be removed, and that's a very careful process that often isn't done correctly as well. This is no offense to the remediation industry. I know a lot of really great guys out there, but there are also a lot of companies out there, they're just not trained properly on how to decontaminate. This requires precision, meticulous precision. It's actually something we teach a lot of our clients to do because they feel like it's going to be a better job if they do it themselves. And it also, I'm starting to witness this magical thing happen where people are starting to also heal their relationship with their home at the same time, because they're kind of getting hands-on. And so this is providing them with this confidence in knowing my house is safe. When you get to that point where you've been through all of this with your home, remediation is not easy to go through. In fact, it's very difficult on marriages, very difficult on families. It requires a lot, especially when you have a bigger problem in your house. Usually the house needs to be packed out, furniture has to get taken out. Some furniture may even need to be discarded, porous things. Everything needs to be cleaned. It's a pretty laborious, time-consuming process. However, it doesn't have to be traumatic, is what I'm just saying. If it's done right and you have the right team, and again, I apologize for using that right word because I really try to like train myself to stay away from that. But if it's done right for that person is what I'm meaning. Like if the expectations are done up front and there's a lot of strategy that goes into it, it doesn't have to be a traumatic thing. It can be, actually a bonding experience for couples to kind of grow stronger together instead of apart. And this is one of the areas where we come in as a consultant. It's kind of like we're a coach in the same way as well, where we're making sure that we can ensure that our couples and our families aren't getting too obsessed with this, that we kind of set boundaries because it really starts to dominate and take over. And sorry, I went on like a totally different path here, but
Did you know that we breathe on average 11,000 liters of air per day, and that indoor air can be up to 5 times more toxic than outdoor air? Meaning that filtering our air is a really great place to start in terms of reducing what is coming into contact with us and also affecting our health. This is why I love my Air Doctor air purifier that I have running at all times in my house. If you go to the show notes, you can find a discount link for almost half off all their air purifier models. Well, no, I think that was really important to address because just like any chronic illness type symptoms or things that you can't see that might be making you feel sick or things like that. It can really take such a toll on your emotions and on your relationships, and even just like you had mentioned, feeling safe in your own home, which is a very scary feeling to return home every day, and or if you work from home every day, whatever it is, but to be in your own home and to feel scared is again creating that stress. All this is creating stress, and we had talked, you had mentioned this earlier about stress. Stress is a toxin in and of itself, and when our bodies are in that sympathetic fight or flight state, our bodies are not going to be focused on detoxing and liver support and gut motility and all these things that are necessary for us to actually help in assessing in supporting our natural detox capabilities, right? And to support our well-being, it's focusing on running from danger, and you know, that shunts away all that important support that we can get on a daily basis if we are stressed. So I think that's really great that you brought that piece into it. That's just very important. And I love all that information that you also gave on the remediation. I did want to go back to the fogging and the killing the mold that I see so often being a piece in a lot of different I guess ways that some companies will promote in terms of, we can get rid of your mold if we just spray it and then you're good to go. And correct me if I'm wrong, but when it comes to fogging or, you know, killing the mold, spraying the mold, mold's whole goal is to try to survive and to live, just like all of us microbial beings. And so if you are creating this environment and where it feels endangered, then it's going to want to live and create a stronger foundation into where it might be living. Is that correct? So it almost might even potentially be making the situation a little bit worse. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely right. I like to compare in this analogy. I like to use a lot of analogies and mnemonics, because a lot of my clients are sick, so I try to help them remember things and picture things a little bit differently. But I like to think of mold as being like a room full of cobra snakes, right? And if our job was to remove all of these cobras, we wouldn't go in like guns a-blazing with all these spray bottles full of disinfectant, right? We'd probably get a snake charmer, you know, do-do-do-do-do. and we try to gently remove them and rehome them. So when you attack mold, just like you said, it has the capacity to defend itself. Mold creates mycotoxins in a couple of different ways. And mycotoxins are secondary metabolites that they're not alive, right? They're literally, you know, it never was living, so you can't kill them. And they create mycotoxins just as a byproduct of their digestion. You know, very similar, I like to say, how we pass gas, we burp. Mold kind of does the same thing, you know, and they create these vapors or mycotoxins. And they can create different mycotoxins at different times, you know, and it doesn't always, they can create different ones, you know. Certain aspergillus can create patulin, you know, ochratoxin A, you know, penicillium can create mycophenolic acid, you know, aflatoxin. And it depends though on what surface they're growing on, and then also their environment. If they're competing with other microbes, they may create a specific mycotoxin based off of what bacteria or other fungal species they're competing against for that territory. They can also, you know, why wouldn't they be able to create mycotoxins in defense of, you know, being chemically attacked? You know, they use it as a defense mechanism. This is how they survive, essentially. So this is one of the many reasons why we don't try to kill mold, is because A, it doesn't do anything, you know, even doesn't matter what it is. Insert product here, bleach, peroxide, chlorine dioxide, essential oils, thyme. You know, it really doesn't matter. Hypochlorous acid, like I said, it doesn't matter what it is. You know, even when we talk about these products, and I'm really big on this because I consider myself to be a decontamination expert. It's one of my fields of study that I absolutely love. And when we talk about disinfectants, which essentially fall into the category of pesticides, they don't work instantly. There's what's called a saturation or dwell time. And so depending on what it is, it takes a while. Even when you look on the back of any of these products, you look on the bottle, it will literally tell you, first and foremost, the surface needs to be clean first. You can't just spray it right directly on mold. And even if you did, you know, it's not going to work for a while. Sometimes it can take 15 to even 30 minutes before it would work. But two, if the surface is, has any remnants of urine or, you know, other, dirt and things like that on the surface, it takes away the efficacy of the actual disinfectant. But, you know, we also have this risk of, you know, we don't want the mold. If it's living, it could possibly release all of its spores, and all of those spores have mycotoxins in them. And so you, therefore, unbeknownst to you, made a more toxic situation, which we don't want to do. We want to be, you know, there's a major issue throughout the world of antimicrobial resistance. So we're very cautious of and work really hard to train our clients and teach our students how to properly use disinfectants and when, because there's a we don't want to be too clean, and we don't want to contribute to that resistance either. But I think that's an important note, especially when you talk about fogging. Fogging was originally made as a method within remediation to push airborne spores down to surfaces for wiping. But then it turned into, let's fog antimicrobials to kill, or it's another way that remediation companies will use with the intention to pass PRV, which is post remediation verification. So it's kind of like, I look at it like, if the remediation company's goal is to pass PRV, that means their goal is not to make your home healthy. You know, if that's their only goal, that's kind of like, they're going to be doing things to try to just pass the test. And that doesn't mean it's making your home healthy. And fogging doesn't, it can pass an air test because they just pushed everything down. And so that is often what these companies will do. They'll say, hey, look, here's your air test. See, it's great. I just had a client yesterday who, you know, had fogged her house twice and super, super sick, you know, and it's just continually gotten worse and worse and worse. And so again, when you are using all of these chemicals, you know, too, what is that doing to the biome? You know, you're making it more stealth-like and even worse in your attempt to try to, remediate the issue. So I'm not really a big fan of fogging just because it's never used properly. You know, if it were, I wouldn't have a problem with it, but it's just a continually abused. There's even companies who promote DIY fogging, and, you know, I'm not really a fan of that either. I'm like, as I said earlier, I'm very root cause oriented, and I'm more in the camp of like, how can we, you know, I understand not everybody has the finances to remediate, and that's sometimes why they would go to a decision like that. But I think there's just other ways that we can try to, make it easier or make it healthier for people if they can't make those moves versus that would not be the way I would go. But, you know, hey, everybody can make their own choices, but it's just not what I would ever recommend for my clients.
And I think that was a really great way to kind of lead into one of the final questions that I do have for you is, you know, remediation is expensive, can be very expensive. And so what would be your recommendations for somebody just generally that they can do to kind of support themselves if they're living in a home with a mold overgrowth that is affecting their health? What are some things that they could do that would be less expensive just to kind of help them get along in terms of their home health in the meantime before they can either leave their home or potentially get around to remediating?
Sure. I think the first thing I would say would be it depends on how long that period is. If we're, because I often get that question, people are so eager, what can I do? You know, they don't, there is some of a little bit of a waiting while you're trying to get all your ducks in a row. And that's probably the most difficult part for people is the before remediation, because that's a lot of strategy. I think the younger George Bush said that one time, strategy in it. And so I'm like cracking up in my head. Strategy is really important. And there's a lot of planning and a lot of back and forth. So if you're literally in a situation and you can't remediate, like, and you're like, hey, I'm not going to be able to afford this or even do anything for over 6 months, maybe a year or more, then I would probably use like air filtration as a way to, you know, air filters to try to bring down some of that load. I would say try to clean, keep your dust levels down, make sure you're trying to care for your HVAC system, change those filters. You know, it depends on what type of filters in your HVAC. If you have the thinner 1-inch, I would change those monthly. If you have the thicker 3-inch, I would do like every 2 to 3 months. But those are just a few things. I'd keep your drains clean and dust levels down. Again, not overly abusing any disinfectants or antimicrobials. Just clean with like Branch Basics or dish soap and water. Just keep it basic, you know. And maybe you could even you know, do a little bit of manual ventilation and open one side of the, open your window on one side of the house and just crack it in the morning, not when it's super hot or humid. And on the other side of the house, you can open and crack the window. So you're getting that airflow, allowing air to come in and allowing air to escape. And that can help maybe exchange the air in the house, maybe just for a half hour, either early morning, early evening, when it's not like blazing out. So, and then maybe try to control the humidity as well. But if you're in a situation where it's just like a few months or something, I really wouldn't invest in anything at that point. I would save your money and just kind of hang tight until remediation happens.
That was great. Thank you so much for those really amazing tips. And I'll even add on to it too. Because I know we were just specifically addressing the home, but even just, you know, adding in like nutrient dense foods and maybe adding in some good like parasympathetic nervous system work, things like that to focus on just naturally detoxifying in the space that you're in while you're waiting to get onto that next point too, which yeah. I know that I'm sure you're a very big proponent of as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, PJ, for being a guest on the Holistic Hub podcast. I had such a great time chatting with you. I could talk with you for another few hours, just like asking you a ton of questions. You are so knowledgeable. Thank you for all that you're doing for people in this space, because this is such a, like you had mentioned, just even 7 years ago, this wasn't even really talked about that much. So it's still becoming more new. And for people to be able to find someone they can relate to and to help them through this is just very, very important on top of everything else. So thank you so much. And I would love to leave you with saying any final words that you have for the audience, and where can people find you to work with you and to find your amazing posts and information that you're putting out there for people.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a total blast. And I love talking about this. This is my life just totally dedicated to this topic. So you can find and work with us on our website. It's very much built to be self-serving. We have a ton of free information there, and we try to make it really simple to work with us. You can go to pjharlowwellness.com and, you know, read all about us and what we do and how the best way to come and work with us. We even have drop-in sessions if you don't want to commit, you just are curious and just want to kind of get some questions answered. We have, like I said earlier, our ERMI test and our interpretation is probably our flagship product. That's where most people start with us. We're on Instagram too. That's where most of our audience is and where I hang out the most and am the most candid, I guess. And that my handle is PJ Harlow Wellness. And we have a lot of free info there too. I have dedicated a lot to my audience there, who I love very much. And I try to provide as much as information as I can for people there, just because I know this is a topic that's not talked about enough. So there's a lot of info there. But thank you so much for having me.